Random House Audio presents Mustang Man by Louis L'Amour, read for you by Terence Mann. Chapter 1. When I came down off the caprock riding a wind-broken bronc, half of New Mexico must have been trailing behind me, all ready to shake out a loop for a hanging. Nobody told me I should wait around and get my neck stretched. So when I'd seen them coming my way, I just wrapped myself around the nearest horse and taken off down country. Seemed likely those boys would run out of ambition before long, but they must have been mighty shy of entertainment in that gyprock country, because they kept a-coming. Me, I hightailed it out of there as fast as that bronc would take me, and for a spell that was pretty fast. Only the bronc had run himself out trying to save my bacon, and now I needed myself a fresh horse, or else I'd never need another. About that time I sighted a clump of cottonwoods down on the flat, and cottonwoods spell water in any man's country. Water usually meant there was stock close by, and probably folks. Where there was either, there might be a horse. So right then I began building myself a fresh dust cloud behind me. When I rode up to those trees, I was just a-fogging it. Sure enough, there were horses there, and some mighty fine stock, too. So I shook out a loop and dabbed it on a handsome lineback dun with a black mane and tail. Snubbing him to a post, I stepped down and unlatched my saddle and threw it on the dun. I cinched up tight and was about to climb into the leather when I heard the click of a cocked hammer and froze right where I was. That gun was behind me, but judging by the sound, the range was no more than 20 feet, and my ma never raised no foolish papooses. Back there in the Clinch Mountains of Tennessee, we boys learned to use guns mighty early, but we also learned to hold them in respect. When a man puts a gun on you, you've no cause to believe he won't use it.
"Mister?"
The voice was dry and cold.
"You sure ain't particular where you put your saddle. Figured I was mighty particular. If that ain't the best horse in the lot, you show me a better and I'll switch my saddle."
He chuckled, but I knew that rifle hadn't moved any. This was a hard man there behind me.
"What you figure gives you title to that horse?"
"Now you keep an eye on the rim of the caprock yonder, and when you see dust fetching up over the rim, you'll know what gives me title. Those boys back yonder got themselves a rope, and they figure on making me the belle of the ball."
"What did you do?"
"Well, I taken a chance and turned around. That old man held a Sharps 50 buffalo gun on me, a gun that would open a hole in a man as big as your fist. He was slight-built, but he had a pair of the coldest eyes you ever did see. I fetched my gun a mite faster than another man, only I was a stranger, and that other man, he owned himself a big outfit and a lot of good friends."
"You got a name? Something folks call you by?"
"Nolan Sackett."
"Heard of you. Outlaw, the way folks tell it."
"Look at that rim, mister. There's your dust. Now this here ain't no time to start discussing a man's moral outlook. There's no time to talk about my past, not if I am to have a future." He stepped around me so's he could look at the rim, and then he said,
"What'd you figure to do now, Sackett?"
"Seems to me I've got a choice between a rope and a bullet, or a rope and a chance. Folks consider me a right fast hand with a six-shooter, so I'm likely to take the chance and see if I could beat you to a killing."
"You wouldn't beat me, Sackett. But I like your sand. You get up on that horse and light out. Hold to the bottom yonder and you'll be out of sight. The canyon cuts back toward the yellow house, and you'll have a fair run down the valley. Give that horse a spell now and again, and he'll take you clear of them."
Well, I taken out, but not before I had one long look at that old man. "Thanks," I said. "And you need a friend, you call on Nolan Sackett, or any Sackett for that matter. For we run long on kinfolk." That lineback dun taken out of there like he had a fire under his tail and was trying to outrun it. Sure enough, the canyon forked, and I went up the branch called Yellow House. An hour later, when I topped out on the cap rock again, there was no sign of pursuit. So I slowed the dun to a canter and then to a walk. That was wide open country, a vast plain cut by occasional ravines, the rare streams flowing into the Arkansas or the Canadian River. Although both rivers lay north of where I was riding, the Arkansas far to the north. This was buffalo country and Indian country, and a man could lose his hair in one unwary moment anywhere within 1,000 square miles. Buffalo hunters had come into it, coming out of Dodge, and here and there a few cattlemen had the idea of moving in, only mostly it was just an idea. The outlaws had come early. Up north of the Canadian was the stretch of country they called No Man's Land, and east of there was Indian Territory. No man in his right mind rode into that country without a gun ready to hand, and the will to use it. There were canyons like the Palo Duro and the Yellow House, but mostly it was cap rock country, and water a rare thing unless you knew where to find it. The buffalo knew. They knew not only the few permanent springs and creeks, but rainwater lakes that sometimes lasted several weeks, or even months if the rains had been heavy. Often enough, though, they vanished within a few days. So following buffalo tracks to hunt water was a chancy thing. Nothing had ever led me to believe that anything would be easy for me. The only trails I knew were long and dusty, blazing hot or freezing cold. The nights I'd slept under a roof these past years were mighty few. A body can get the name of outlaw sometimes without half trying. And I hadn't tried. I guess I never cared much either. We Clinch Mountain Sackets were good enough folk, I guess, but a mite poorer and rougher than those over in the Cumberlands or down on the flatlands. We sprung from thin soil and raised more kin than crops, but we were proud folk, too. And in those days a man's pride was defended by a gun. I ain't saying it was right, only that was the way it was. And gun battles were not only a matter of us feudin' folks from Tennessee, nor in the West. It was the way things were done all over the country. And in Europe, too, they say. Andrew Jackson himself, him who was President of the United States, engaged in several gun battles, and killed Charles Dickinson in a duel. He got his shoulder shot up in the fight with the Bentons, and it was claimed that he had a hand in 103 duels as a fighter, a second, or a member of the party. He was only one of many. Few prominent men avoided duels if they entered public life, where somebody might speak slander of them, nor could a man continue to live in any community where it was known he'd been called a liar and had failed to fight, or, in fact, if he had failed to fight whenever honor demanded it. But I could lay no claim to dueling or fighting in the way of defending my honor or anybody else's. Soon as I was old enough, I drifted west, living as best I could. There was little enough at home, and when I was gone, there was one less to feed. What fights I had, after the Higgins feud, were mostly with rough men who lived in the same way I did. Now as I rode, the plain stretched wide around me, flat as a floor, as far as a man could ride. Not a tree, not a bush, just the low, dusty grass and the wide, milky blue sky above. I took off my beat-up old hat and wiped the sweatband. That hat had never been much account, and the bullet hole left there by a Kiowa brave before he died had done it no good. Looking at that hat made me feel glum. A man ought to have a few worthwhile things in his life. All my years I'd honed for a store-bought suit, but I'd never managed it yet, nor even a good saddle. It was little enough a man could have unless he got lucky with cards or went west to the gold fields. Some folks had the turn for making money. Seemed to me I never did. But that was a good horse I rode now, maybe the best I'd ever had, and I owed that old man a debt. There was something about him I cottoned to, anyway. He was a hard old man, and he would have torn my guts out with that buffalo gun if I'd made a move for my gun. But when the chips were down and I'd been holding no more than a couple deuces, he had come through. Of a sudden, I saw the wagon. For several minutes, I'd been watching what looked to be a low white cloud lying off on the horizon and hoping it was no thunderhead. Thunderstorms can roll up almighty fast out there on the plains, and such lightning as you never saw. A man standing out on the level lands is a natural attraction for lightning, to say nothing of a man on horseback carrying a pistol and a rifle. Now, as I rode on, I began to see it was no cloud, but a wagon top. And beside the wagon, a woman was standing. She was a mile or more off, but it was a woman, all right. What set me to fretting was that she was alone, nobody else in sight, and no stock of any kind, no horses or mules or oxen. And that worried me. Folks caught up with trouble out on the grasslands would do almost anything for a horse, and I was riding a good one. So I didn't just fetch up to that wagon. I veered wide.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?